interesting that this is the longest time that Jesus spends on any one emotion. And he's trying to get at the root of worrying by asking these rhetorical questions to his disciples. And maybe he does this because he realizes that the way that he begins, "Don't worry about your life," isn't necessarily the most effective way to get people to stop worrying. I mean, if you've ever been told, "Don't worry," it has the opposite effect. One of the times I was most nervous in my life was when I went skydiving for my 18th birthday. My parents asked me what I wanted for my birthday, and I said, "You know, I want to go skydiving," because no way in heck would they ever consent to something like that. But they called my bluff, and they bought me these tickets, or this one ticket. Well played. Well played. And I remember on the flight up, it was at 14,000 feet was the altitude that we were trying to get. And we were in this old rickety plane that didn't even have chairs in it, which for some reason is a detail I remember. But there I was crouching down on the floor of this plane, and I'm probably hugging my knees and probably rocking back and forth. And I'm alternating between cussing and praying, one breath to the next. And the guy who was jumping with me, because you have to go tandem, you have to go with someone on your back the first time you go skydiving, this guy turned to me and he asks, "Are you worried?" And I replied, "Yeah, I'm worried." And he said, "Don't worry, I'll be fine." And, you know, this guy, there was some wisdom in that. He got me to calm down a little. And I think I've thought of this man when I read this story from Matthew, because I think Jesus asks these questions, and maybe even in a playful way, as a way of getting to that worry and cracking it open and letting it breathe some air. I mean, is worrying about your survival legitimate? Absolutely. Our brains are wired to worry. It's legitimate, in my mind, to worry about your life, to worry about sustenance and clothing and the future. And if you're poor, if you're not a person with means, which most of Jesus' disciples were, they left everything to follow him, their fears were legitimate. Their worries were common. And so I wonder if Jesus maybe isn't taking a stab at worry in a generic sense here. Is he taking the wind out of the what ifs? Or is he maybe trying to do something a little different? Worrying is definitely a problem because of how much it hinders our lives, how much it shackles us as individuals and as communities from doing what we ought to do. The poet W.H. Auden famously called the 20th century the age of anxiety. But I was in a bookstore when I was getting that Shel Silverstein book last night and came across the latest edition of Newsweek. And what was on the cover? Anxiety. And Joseph Ledeau, who's one of the world's experts on human fear, said that every age thinks it's the age of anxiety. And the whole article, it was pretty fascinating because it seems that anxiety has always been with us as long as we've had our amygdalas. But it's, in the last generation or so, taken on this particular flavor. I mean, we have very real problems to what if. What if the planet burns up? That's a legitimate fear. And we have all these what ifs. I mean, the statistics abound. We are a quite anxious people. At least in North America. And many researchers think that the internet and social media, having it readily access it to it in our pockets, and the constant access to news is so stressful that it can induce a slow burn panic. But the good news, according to the article, is that medical science is on it and that they're finding more ways to treat anxiety, which are very good and well, and that there are a myriad of techniques to help us be present in the moment and to stop worrying about the future so much. And I think that Jesus presents some wisdom here about ways that we can take those legion of worries, those legion of what ifs, and put them in perspective. I love that question. Can any of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your life? Well, no. He's right. Worrying doesn't lengthen our lives. It can only shorten it, in fact, if you think about what high blood pressure can do. But I think with Jesus, with these rhetorical questions that he's asking his disciples, he's trying to get at that specific worry that impedes the reign of God, the rule of God, the ways that God operates in the world from emerging in our midst. And the kind of worrying that he's referring to, I believe, is the worrying that causes us to be afraid that there's never enough to go around. And because there's not enough to go around, we worry that we won't have enough, and we stop trusting that God will provide for us as God provides for all creation, the flowers and the birds. And we therefore, because we have this fear that there won't be enough, we start to steadily hoard stuff at the expense of our neighbors. Did you know that the root of the English word worry basically means to strangle or to choke? Think of all the ways that in our society, worrying about wealth strangles the well-being of the whole human family. I mean, the word Jesus uses here is mammon, which is similar to the way that we speak of money as the almighty dollar. In a sense, you could substitute the word stuff. You can't not serve both God and stuff, Jesus says. And is it legitimate to worry about self-preservation? Is it legitimate to plan for the future? How do you do so faithfully? Is it legitimate to be concerned about our loved ones and ourselves and to balance those needs with the needs of others? I mean, all of that Jesus frustratingly doesn't seem to offer a practical solution to. I wonder what this means for me and my pension, you know? What do you make of all this? But how many examples can we come up with when we think about the anxious pursuit of wealth, our toiling and our spinning and our gathering into barns and all that stuff, how that ends up standing in the way between us and God's will for the world? I mean, think about the ways that this anxious, possessive pursuit of wealth drives income inequality. I mean, one of the biggest problems out there, for example, the rate of CEO to worker pay in this country, can you guess? 500-1, not bad. 278-1, when it was like 30-1 back in the 70s. And you got this high disparity when so many people are struggling to make ends meet, and the economic numbers that the government presents really aren't, don't tell the true story of what it means to struggle in America. How much does that anxiety-ridden desire to acquire wealth guarantee that some will have and some will not? Not enough health care, not enough education, not enough access to power. And again, think of what the not enough in terms of conspicuous consumption, what it's doing to our planet home. Bailey saw this on Twitter this morning, and she texted me right in time. It's a quote from Henry Nouwen, who said that one way to pray in a world filled with fear is to choose love over anxiety. What Jesus says to us is to first strive for God's reign, for God's way of running the world, and to put our worries about there being enough gently aside. In effect, he says, be generous now. Seek justice and peace now. Choose that love for neighbor over our anxiety of, is America full? Choose it over all our fears that blind us to the humanity of others. And choose all that, all take that anxiety about the future and love your neighbor now. Tend to the needs of others now. And leave the rest up to God. Now briefly, Bailey's invited us to share a little bit, you know, to hold these stones, and we're going to do something with those in a moment. But if you would, just to get a conversation started, turn to someone near you, preferably someone who you didn't drive here with. And if you're comfortable, share something about the way the worries you have and the way that those worries might have a stranglehold on your life. Take just a few minutes, talk amongst yourselves, and see what we learn. Okay, really briefly to call us back, does anyone have a burning insight or awareness that they learned from the conversation that they had, something you heard someone else say that really stuck with you. Bailey's going to be our Phil Donahue here. Anyone who cared to share? In the back, Barry.
You got to hold it real close to your face or it won't
pick up. Yeah, imagine me being thankful for being able to see. No, but the burden of being able to see, then not being able to see, and now being able to see again, it is like the stone that you've dropped.
Thank you. Others? Steffi.
Right up close, okay. One thing that in our conversation just now, but also the conversation we had last week at the Lunch and Learn, it's really become clear to me that each generation, they have a different set of anxieties. And you might, like you were saying, you might think that, oh, my generation has the worst set of anxieties ever. But then in that conversation, we learned what anxieties younger people don't have that older folks do have, and vice versa. So in a way, it gives you perspective that we all, no matter how old we are, we share anxieties. They might be different. They probably are different. But that there's nothing new under the sun, which in its own way can be a little comforting.
Thank you for sharing that. John had one? Sorry. Bailey's got the microphone so everybody can see you. Hear you. Yeah.
Thanks, Bailey. Well, we kind of went beyond the personal anxieties and talked more about global anxieties and our concern that we really must get to work on the climate change problem before it's too late for all of us. And I think that's a very scary thing, especially when we consider the future of our children and grandchildren. And that was the main. Also, we agreed with Bart about the political concern that he expressed.
Thank you, John.
My main anxiety is what Donald Trump was doing, and how much of a bully he has become to all of us, and how he's been almost creating a lot of war instead of peace to our country.
It's really well put.
Can I share what you said? So my conversation partner said something very wise. A fear that I have is it's related to resources in sort of a spiritual or emotional sense. I worry that if I do the work that seems obvious, right, about climate or about other kinds of justice and peace in the world, that if I do the work, then I will be exhausted, but nothing will happen. And my conversation partner shared with me wisdom that she received from someone else a long time back, which is about the yoga of duty, right, that yoga has a lot of pieces, actually, that the postures that we associate it with it are just one. And one of the yogas is duty. And that the performance of duty is good in itself and is good divorced from outcome.
Say that again.
So duty is good in itself and it is good even apart from particular outcomes. And that resonated with me because I think it is similar to what we see in Scripture, that there's goodness, right? There's justice, there's righteousness, and there's mercy. And we are called to do these things and live these things and enact these things. And that's not necessarily because of outcome, but because of their goodness. And that was helpful to me. That was helpful to me. I saw a hand.
Bruce's.
My reaction to the what ifs is that we obviously need what ifs to get through life. I mean, because it's part of what we need to understand in terms of where the risks are. But it's sorting through those and deciding which you have to let go and which you want to keep uppermost. And how do you get there? It's determining what your values are and how much you can realistically accomplish, I guess. Because if you're just sitting and paralyzed by it, it's no good. And I guess that's part of the message. Hmm.
Charlie had one in the back.
We keep thinking of what ifs as worry and concerns and so on. The great thing about what ifs is, what if we cure polio? What if we cure cancer? A lot of really great, wonderful things allow us to live our lives because of what ifs.
That's a great point.
And they're not necessarily worries. Somebody decided that they could go into my heart and do a what if. And that's why I'm standing here. That's why a lot of us are standing here. It's because it wasn't necessarily, oh my God. It's, oh my God, what can we do? So what ifs are not just worries, folks. Come on now. Let's bring this around. There's two sides to every argument, and what ifs can be extremely wonderful.
This is like one of my favorite days ever. Thank you, Charlie, for that. So sort of volley about that, one more question. What do you think about what Jesus says here? What do you think he is saying? Do you agree with him? Do you disagree with him? Do you see an excessive amount of complexity or nuance to it? But respond to what Jesus is saying about worry, or about what I said about what Jesus is saying about worry. Just any responses, generically. Janet? I want everybody to hear you.
Another name for worry is fear. Mm-hmm. Someplace it says in Scripture, perfect love casts out fear. Mm-hmm. But geez, I mean, I'm a very fearful person. You're not talking about what ifs. Mm. What if this keeps going and gets worse? Mm. I think we have each other in this witness that we're trying to do. We come here to be nourished and go back out into the world and share the best we can. I think that's what Jesus is saying. Mm. Live. Stop being mired down. But go live and reach out. Help one another. Be busy.
Could you repeat that last sentence? Seriously, that was beautiful.
That stop, don't have time for worry. Go out into the world and help one another and minister to each other and hold up fast to those who are loving and helping too. And
amen. Thank you for that. I kind of want to end on that because it was just so wonderful. Any last thoughts? Yeah, Paul.
So with what if, it's all, you know, what if I'm wrong? What if I can't? What if I can? What if I can? What if I could reach out? What if I can reach out and help somebody? What if I could, you know, learn a new song, learn something else, or whatever. So it's not all negative. It's,
right.
It's, you know, a lot of times you're going, what if I can? And sometimes it's a matter of rephrasing how you look at a problem as to what, you know, how can I affect this? How can I make it better?
What if can have its positive, constructive dimensions. Absolutely. What if there were enough? Molly, one more, and then we'll have our anthem.
Well, I agree with both of you. Both of you ring true completely. Mm. I mean, there's that great Grimm's fairy tale, Clever Elsie, in which, you know, she says, what if this happens? What if this happens? This happens, and then drives herself insane and becomes homeless and is running around half-dressed, mad. And that's what can happen. But also, what if is, I mean, it's the suspended disbelief of the imagination. I mean, that suspended disbelief is the source of almost all art. Frankly, putting a garden in every year for me, you know, it, that belief that, well, I'll learn something more. It, you know, what if this the birds don't eat all the seeds this year? Or what if, I mean, there? Or what if I discover, you know, a whole new kind of radish to put in the ground that grows better? So those are humble examples, but they, for me, fit And so we're kind of balanced. It's like the hungry wolf and the nurturing wolf inside each of us. And those two trains of thought run in my mind. Becoming aware, for me, of when I'm on the what-if train of anxiety, as opposed to what-if imagination, and which is love. Those two tracks, knowing when they're occurring, is what matters for me.
And what I agree. I should have said that. there is that the posture of faith, the posture of trust, the posture of love is an imaginative what if, because it allows that possibility. Thank you, Molly.
I went back to them. I just wanted to make sure nobody.
Yeah, you're good. Holy wisdom, holy word.
Thanks be to God.
De colores han visto los campos en la primavera. De colores son los pajaritos que vienen de afuera. De colores es el arcoíris que vemos lucir. Y por eso los grandes amores de muchos colores me gustan a mí. Y por eso los grandes amores de muchos colores me gustan a mí.